Yes, You're Wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love. And we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Shelby, I've been meaning to talk to you about something. One, would you like a conversation with me?
Oh, I'd love to. You know what? I should have reached out to you. This probably was very triggering to you. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry for not being a better friend.
Number two, I have cancer, and part of the vacation is you watching me die in Switzerland.
you know, I would do it though. I would be there for you. Yes. I would have no question about it, honestly.
Yeah, you do have sort of like a general willingness to go to the full dark side of things.
Yeah, exactly.
So if I was like, oh, like, I think I'm going to do assisted suicide, you'd be like, yep, sure. I've been okay. Trying to do it for years. I'm ready to
literally.
Go. Let's go to Switzerland.
Literally.
I'll do it with you. Yeah. Do it together. I'm like, no, you're not sick, Shelby. You don't have to die. You're like, oh, I might as well.
Had a good run. Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's see what's on the other side. Got to be better than this. Yeah, no, I'd be there for you. Definitely.
We are talking about Hacks.
Yeah.
Which has ended its 5-season run.
Yeah.
It's won lots of Emmys. It's done all kinds of things, but it came to a conclusion last Thursday with the grand finale.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I feel like maybe we did an episode on Hacks.
I don't think so.
I don't know.
I think it's like you've always been a fan from day one. I got into it slowly. Like, I think I was thinking about it. I honestly don't think I watched season 3. Like, I think
like
I lost
all
interest.
Ever?
Yeah, because that's the season where they're like at odds with each other, right? Or no, no, season 4 is the one where they're fighting each other, which I did watch.
Season 1, Deborah Vance, played by Jean Smart, hires Ava Daniels, played by Hannah Einbinder, to sort of help her zhuzh up her comedy set because she's getting fired from from her Las Vegas residency.
Yeah.
And then season 2, they are on the road together.
That's
when she decides that that Deborah's gonna like tour around. So they're on the bus with Laurie Metcalf, and it's a lot of that. And then I can't remember I think it's the end of season 2 that she decides that she is going to
special.
That she wants to be a late night host. Yeah. And so so season 3 is all about them like angling to get Deborah the job as the late night host of a late night show. And at the end of the season, she gets that. And then season 4 is like basically her run at the late show. That ends in her quitting because the network wants them to get rid of Ava. And she's like, no, we're leaving together.
She's like, that's
and
my
they
girl.
And they go to Singapore for one random episode. And then season 5 is all leading up to this big Madison Square Garden comedy set that Deborah Vance wants to do.
Yeah, so I think I skipped at least most of season 3, which is wrong of me.
I also think season 3 is maybe the best season of the show.
No.
I loved season 3. I think season 3 is really, really, really good. And it like season 3 has such a strong arc because you from the get-go like know what the objective is. She wants to get this late night show.
I know, but then she betrays Ava and I don't like that.
But then it kind of comes back around and then there's that great finale where then Ava sort of like tricks Deborah into it's so good. Season 3 is incredible. Season 4 sort of meanders a little bit, I think, and then season 5 is also
but season phenomenal. 4 you have the fun of what is it, Lusak and
Schaefer,
Schaefer and Lusak and Robbie Hoffman, and
yes,
so I think that's what not them specifically lured me back, but I think Well, actually, I think I did see like a clip and I was like, oh, that's funny. I'll like get back into it. And then I was locked in. And so when this season came out, I was like, oh, okay. Like I hear good things and I've seen a few clips of, you know, funny bits. And I think this is the best season, if I may say
so. I think
so
too. I think season 5 is also the best season.
Yeah.
It's extremely well done.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that this show has done a great job of is recognizing like the things that are working and going in that direction. And not like in a fan service-y way, but just sort of like in a way that makes sense to the story. Because the first season, you know, it's a lot of Jean Smart and Hannah Einbinder, but there's a lot of time spent with the people who are in Jean Smart's sort of like staff of her like manager played by Carl Clemens Hopkins, Marcus, and then Mark Indelicato's character, her housekeeper, like, and there's a little bit of like Paul W. Downs as her agent and a little bit of Meg Stalter as like his assistant, but they do not have like a major role by any means. And then as the show goes, you can tell that that dynamic between Meg Stalter and Paul W. Downs, like everybody loves it and it's so fun that their roles get bigger and some of the other side characters like sort of fall away a bit. Not that they get rid of anybody because everyone's still here in the end, but just like, you know, they're not quite as pivotal.
Because this was created by, well, Paul W. Downs and then Lucia Jen Statsky and Lucia Aniello. And so Paul is the only actor of that bunch, and he was also a draw for me personally because he was also an actor slash writer on Broad City and had one of the funnest like side characters in that show.
Yes.
So loved him. And so it was like, I think season one was honestly a little hard for me because it had that like, we have to be a show about being funny, but like maybe the funniest bits aren't the people who think they're being funny. You know what I mean? Like, it was like the comedy bits have always been maybe the weakest, like the actual like stand-up jokes aren't actually the funniest parts of this show. But they're trying to pitch it as like, no, she's the greatest comedian ever. And they're so funny and everyone's laughing. So it's like hard for me to like embrace that. But then, once they started to embrace the zanier, kookier sides of these characters, then I enjoyed it more.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is so hard to be a show where you're telling the audience like, oh, this woman is a very funny stand-up comic.
Yeah.
When you're writing the joke for her, it's similar to in a movie where they're like, oh, and this is like a big hit song. And you're like, okay, but I actually don't think that this would be a hit song on the radio. Or like, oh,
or
this
books
is like,
and books.
Oh, like this is the best painting that's ever existed. And you're like, no, like, I just don't think that that like painting
it's
would
a
be causing
sell.
A stir.
Yeah.
I think the thing that does kind of work though for Hacks is, because she's supposed to be a little bit washed up and a little bit of like a Joan Rivers kind of thing, you can see that, okay, while her humor is not necessarily like landing with me, like her jokes probably would land with a very specific group of like older women, like older gay men who find her very funny. And so I think that works. But as the seasons have gone on, they've sort of like given us less and less of her sets and given us more of other stuff to the degree that this big comedy set that she's sort of working up to this season, we see like one joke.
Nothing. I loved it. It worked very well for me. Because, I think obviously what also helps a show is when it seems like everyone's invested in it, everyone's having a good time making it, and that's like clearly the case for this show. Not only because you've had these like random duos and friends come out of it, like Meg Stalter and Paul doing their random red carpet stuff or their whatever bits they have going on at any given moment, but it's like clear that it was a tightly knit show. They had a clear vision for it. Similar, I think, to the praise something like Shrinking gets, which we'll see how they handle like this new season. But like they went into Shrinking knowing what they wanted, knowing these characters, having a vision for the end. And the same has been said for Hacks. And I think that helps because it doesn't leave you forced to push a character in an unearned or kind of whiplashy way. All these characters, while they learn and grow, they also remain distinctly themselves. And I think that's part of the charm, is like the believability of it. And you're not like forced into the sitcom trap of like, oops, where do we go from here? Like, how do we continue to keep the sort of farce of it and the tension of it without destroying these people's lives and characters? So yeah, it was fun to see that kind of progress across the seasons.
It does make you want. So I'm like, where do I begin with this? Okay. So I think that Hacks, in its 5-season arc, which you've seen 4 of, or 3, 4.5, however many, I'm like, yeah. I think Hacks is one of the best TV shows that we have had in recent memory.
Mm-hmm.
Like, start to finish. It is right. Ended just as well, if not better, yeah, than it started. I think that to have a perfect TV show where, like, all of the seasons have been good, mm-hmm, it's progressed, mm-hmm, in a strong way, mm-hmm, the characters feel like they've gone on a journey, the end feels satisfying. Like, I think the only other show that I can think of in recent years that has had that has been Succession. Like, I think, mm-hmm, that Succession also, like, did that in a way that really worked. And that was only, yeah, 4 seasons. This was 5. But I'm,
and
like,
I feel like, to respect maybe the different side, I do think Abbott Elementary gets the same sort of praise, even though it's a little bit more sitcom, like 30 minutes, same.
But
thing.
Abbott Elementary hasn't ended yet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's okay, like, yeah. So we're still waiting. Yeah.
Right, yeah. So I think it's hard, you know, because like on one hand, Abbott Elementary like could end next season and have like, yeah, a very satisfying thing. On the other hand, Abbott Elementary, yeah, does seem like one of those shows that could, yeah, go on for 12 seasons and you're kind of like, yeah, okay, what are we doing here anymore?
Yeah.
Where Hacks, I think, like, pulled, you know, yeah, it left at exactly the right time when it was, like, at its peak. I, yeah, kind of guess, like, Schitt's Creek is also sort of in that same...
More uneven, more uneven, thing. But yes, yeah. They landed the ship well.
Right, yeah. And I think those last couple seasons of Schitt's Creek, yeah, are really strong, yeah, even if, like, maybe some of the middle ones are a bit,
yeah,
lumpier.
They knew how to write the ship. Yeah.
But I just, I don't understand the thought process of like not coming up with a general outline for your show when you are pitching it. Like, I understand that you can't, you know, write every single episode. Like, that there are things that are going to be moving around and there's going to be characters that do better and characters that do worse or whatever. But I'm like, it feels like you should have a general arc to your show, yeah, of like, okay, at the beginning of Succession, we have all of these kids who are fighting for their dad's, you know, sort of like approval, and they think he's going to die, but then he doesn't die. So who is the successor? And then over the arc of that series, it's like they're going to have to deal with the dad, then the dad is going to die, and then we're going to see who actually becomes the successor of the company. It's like in 2 minutes, you can pitch what that arc of that show looks like, even if the seasons, you know, you sort of haven't figured out all of the exact pieces that are moving. And I think the same with Hacks, you can tell how they pitched this as this relationship between Ava and Deborah and how that arc of that season would go, where it moves from a spot where they sort of like hate each other and their colleagues to the point where they're sort of like have this mother-daughter sisterly like relationship where they care about each other so much that, you know, the thought of Deborah dying in the finale is like sending Ava into a tailspin where she, you know, would have been fine with this, you know, it's like she hated this woman at the beginning, yeah, of the show.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, why aren't you doing this? Like, why isn't every show doing this?
Yeah.
And I get that some shows are like, you know, it's a network TV and the network's greedy and they're like, no, like, let's keep going. Yeah. And so they push it too far. But I'm like, most TV shows only get canceled after one or two seasons. Like, very few TV shows get the luxury of making it all the way to the end. You might as well have a plan for what you want that to look like from the start.
And it's like, I doubt they had the script. They were just like, oh, no. I bet Jean Smart's character is going to get cancer and die, but then actually decide that she wants one more special. Like, it mirrors the opening scene. It's easy. Right. It's smart. It's simple.
And like, Ava's going to finally have like a reboot, but it's going to be of Deborah's old show.
Yeah.
Like, there's just like symmetry to it that works so well that I feel like you could only have if you knew it from the start.
Yeah, because they can pepper in all the little like references or reminders or kind of plant the seeds for where this might go and all that. And and I think that is kind of the strength of season 5 because it was like, you know, some final seasons can get pretty indulgent or like, there's a lot of fan service, but this never like sacrificed an actual storyline. Like, yes, everyone does get their happy ending, which might feel a little cheesy, but it doesn't feel unearned. Like, it doesn't feel unrealistic for what they're, you know, going through and what they're put through. And it just has fun doing it. Like, it has fun honoring this sort of story that they've laid the groundwork for. And so I think it was like fun to watch because you know that it's ending and they could either do a big surprise like plot twist, oh my God, what's going to happen? Or they can just like go along with the current trajectory and do a really good job writing it. And I think that's what they did. And so while there were some like, you know, maybe cliche cheesy wins for Schaefer and Lusak, it's still like, oh, well, that's nice. We like seeing it come together. Oh, yeah, it's okay. We'll allow this. And it still feels good because it feels like semi-realistic.
The thing, I think that the last two seasons, season 3 and season 4, had such like a strong arc to what they were trying to accomplish plot-wise. And I was a little bit nervous about that for season 5 because it's like, okay, well, she did the late night show. Like, what is she going to do? And then early on, it's established, oh, she wants to do this Madison Square Garden residency.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, this performance. Like, okay, it feels like we've already sort of done this. Like, the stakes aren't really there that much. But then the season's mostly kind of like a hangout season. Like, yes, there are plot points, but it's mostly every episode is sort of its own little microcosm of a thing where, like, Deborah and Caitlin Olsen going on The Amazing Race, like, is such a fun episode, but kind of, like, doesn't really, like, matter at all to the plot point. And the same with the Montecito episode where they go to Cherry Jones and Leslie Bibb's house to try to get the Carol Burnett outfit. Like, it, I guess, technically kind of connects into the plot because it's like, okay, well, Deborah got to get this outfit, but not really. And then as it turns out, the final Madison Square Garden show isn't even the big thing. Like, the rug gets pulled out from under that. And that whole plot is done by the time you get to the finale. Like, the finale isn't actually about that at all.
It's about female friendship, guys. It's talking about the show. It's so beautiful. I think that's what was like charming about it is they were kind of like standalone, which felt almost more a slice of life than having some like big work driven, I don't know, through line.
And I also love that as an, like, I think that Succession, not to keep coming back to that show, did a good job of that as well, of having these episodes that were kind of like, okay, and we're all going to, like, bore on the floor or whatever. It's like, we're all going to this place, there's some sort of conference, like, we're having an episode here, and then we're moving on to whatever the next thing is. And so they're all super distinct and they kind of move the plot forward, but they're also sort of these own like really fun side adventures. And when you have really good actors and you have really good writers, it's like actually fun to watch them in any situation. You're like, sure, put Deborah in a box over the Las Vegas strip. Like have her date a random 25-year-old so for an episode. Like, love it.
I mean, do you feel like anyone was neglected, or maybe Meg Stalter had too much to do this season? What's your vibe on the secondary storylines?
I really loved the, I mean, Paul W. Downs and Meg Stalter are so funny. I loved all of their stuff. I honestly, not to, you know, wish this, because I feel like this could be a wish that I would regret really quickly, but like, I could honestly watch a spinoff that's like the two of them.
That's what she's pitching.
and like their own sort of, like not dealing with Deborah or Ava, but like dealing with whatever their different clients are, sort of in like a Party Down kind of way, where it's like every week there's like a different client emergency that they have to work through, which I think would be funny. I don't know if I need that, but I liked their arc. I love their friendship and how that sort of developed. I was terrified that at some point they were going to try to make them love interest, but they never did. And I'm so glad for that.
Can you imagine?
I liked it. Was it a little cliche that they end up like getting control over the entirety of her father's company?
Yeah, wow, that's a big... Like I would be scared if that was my boss. Yes. I'd be like, what the? No,
but
thank
then
you.
But then I also sort of like that the show did say like, wait, this is kind of weird. And that, like all the employees were like, no, we're leaving. Like, bye. Sorry. We're not going to do this. Did you like their ending?
Yeah. I feel like they are like not to diminish the leads of the show, but they are like my favorite part. And I feel like they had a lot of fun this season. Like the Hannah Montana bit and just like their random, the good cop, bad cop in the first step. Like there was just so a lot funny. Of fun to be had with them. Honestly, one of the most laugh out lines for me was the penultimate episode when she's like, I'll call my camp friends. They run New York. I just like the zaniness.
And so true.
Yeah, but I honestly, the thing that like left the biggest question mark was sort of the daughter of it all. Like, yes, they had the Amazing Race episode, but it's like she did not make another appearance except in like crowds as like sort of a throwaway like acknowledgement of her existence.
Unfortunately, I think that just has to do with scheduling, because like Caitlin Olsen is not only like the long running star of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but then also sort of stumbled into being the star of like the biggest ABC procedural high potential that she's in. And then she also had this, you know, Hacks thing going before that as well. Yeah. So
she's booked and busy. Yeah. I love that. Mean,
I liked the Amazing Race episode. And I do think that that was a, like was sort of like a good moment for the two of them.
Yeah.
If Deborah had died and we hadn't gotten more closure with the daughter, I think that would have been crazy.
I was like, in the final episode, I'm like, there's no acknowledgement of her child. Like, I know I don't expect them to be like I think the relationship dynamic with Ava and Deborah. I was like, Jean Smart. I think that's like a fair good thing that it's like she does have this daughter familial friend relationship with Ava that she cannot ever have with her daughter because of the mistakes she made as a parent. And so that will always be its own thing, and it doesn't need to become like the bestie for life thing that I think some shows might have felt they needed for that dynamic to feel forgiven. And so I didn't need like her to be the one that she confided in or anything like that. But I did feel like, okay, they could have acknowledged maybe like, and I told my daughter about this, or, you know, I saw my grandchild for the last time or something beyond vintage shopping in Paris with her work bestie. So that was like my one wrinkle where I'm like, I mean, I guess it is classic Deborah to not give her daughter a single passing thought in that you know,
yeah, it was
state of day. But
yeah, I also am like, if she knew that she was gonna die, I think like I could have used another scene with her and her sister.
Yeah. Oh they, yeah.
Because they also have the episode early on with the salt and pepper shakers. But yeah. I'm like, I think we could have used a moment of that. I really loved this season. I think that and I guess there was sort of the scene earlier on where she, you know, goes and gets checked out at the doctor or whatever. But I'm like, I think that to have within the 40-minute long final episode, her like say that she has cancer, is preparing to die, go on this trip, and then be like, okay, and never mind, I actually am getting treatment, is a little bit of a fast turnaround. I think I think that like this could have worked better perhaps if we had gotten the cancer reveal like a couple of episodes ago, and she was like, but I'm still gonna do my show or whatever, and then afterwards I'll get treatment, and then after the show ends then she goes, oh wait, I'm actually not getting treatment, I'm gonna go do. So there would just been a little bit more time to have these moments with the other characters. But I loved her relationship with Chris McDonald, the man who owns the original casino that she's in, who then she brings back to work on her casino. And I like also that Marcus from her early season sort of gets brought back in, because I kind of feel like they didn't really know what to do with Marcus's character in the middle. But then to bring him back to run this casino does feel like a very strong place for him to be.
Everyone got a neat little bow.
Yeah, Kiki, I'm trying to think of the other...
The
blackjack dealer. Yeah, she's blackjack also dealer. They're basically funneling everybody
in the casino. Family like, business.
Josefina works at the casino now.
Yeah.
Damien's at the casino.
Yeah. Which I like. Like I did like it did feel sort of in a way too obvious to have her die in the finale. Like I was like, okay, like this is kind of cheesy, but I think it is very, you know, literally life affirming to kind of have this full circle moment of this woman who thought her life was over and who now thinks her life is literally over, and having to realize like, well, maybe it's not everything I thought it'd be, maybe it's not going to be perfect, maybe there'll be some discomfort, but I have this like relationship that really fuels me. And it felt like sort of the happy version of Mother Mary, where it's like these collaborations they don't have to be the toxic soul-sucking force of your life. They can be the life-affirming, joyous part of your life. And I admired that. I liked that dynamic and seeing them get to relax for once, because so much of the show is them together, obviously, but always sort of in these problem-solving, high-anxiety sort of ways. But here they're just wandering Paris and dancing and contemplating life's value.
I did like that the final episode spent so much time on Deborah and Ava together, because not to throw another recent series finale under the bus, but the And Just Like That series finale,
which,
you know, supposedly
speaking of perfect shows,
they knew that they planned, it definitely wasn't the network that cut them.
That was planned from the beginning.
Like that show ends and the three main characters don't have a single scene together in the finale. And so I liked that it was like, we are getting back to basics. Like, sure, we'll have this, you know, like latitude or whatever, like sort of B plot going on. But most of these will just be Deborah and Ava in Paris, like disconnected from everybody else. And and just sort of like laughing, crying, like
wandering the Louvre together. Like, how rich is Deborah? Like, please.
I know. That was the one part where I was like, I know like, that you're wealthy, but I don't know that you're like this wealthy.
It's like Beyonce is the only person to have done that.
Well, and I don't even think, like, Beyonce filmed in the Louvre, but it was, like, at night.
That's true. You know?
It wasn't like Beyonce shut down the Louvre during the day. I think that she was just, like, had it open in the evening.
Well, I mean, it can't be that much if HBO did it. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like they paid an obscene amount for this one show.
I'm like, but HBO,
maybe it's more realistic. Maybe you can host a party at the Louvre for,
well, I'm like renting a movie theater. Is that there's basically what, like maybe three shots. Like, they definitely just closed down sections of it at a time when they were filming. Yeah. Whereas supposedly in the show, she just has the whole Louvre shut down, which is a bit wild to me.
Been amazing. Ugh, that's the only way I'd want to experience the Louvre, honestly.
I love the Louvre, and I don't mind other people being there.
Ugh, it, too many people. It's like Disneyland.
I will say this about this episode. So I have been to Paris twice.
You hate Paris. Yeah.
The first time, well, the first time I got mono and was stuck in my like hotel room the whole time. And then the second time I went, it was right before I found out that I had cancer. And so while I was there, I didn't know that I was sick, but I was sort of like not feeling well the whole time. And now in my mind, that trip sort of has like cancer vibes to it. So when I was watching them sort of like in their coats, wandering around Paris, like doing all the same things that I did while I was there before I got sick, I was like, oh, this is really hitting me in a nostalgic way that I don't think is hitting the vast majority of people who are watching this, but I am feeling a lot of emotions about it.
I think so. I think, I mean, it was just like, it's nice to see. I think that's honestly why I turned off season three or something, is I don't love a toxic relationship. It's hard for me. And so much of them on paper is probably not healthy. But I think this season and the final episode especially sort of highlights what they are for each other, and that, you know, you can't like fight friendship however it comes. And like, and if that, if you become slightly obsessed with each other to the point of not having any other friends, like, so be it, you know. It's fine. You have to take what you get. And I liked that they were able to like vocalize that they matter to each other. Obviously that comes from season four, them working through their like tension and hating each other, and then realizing like, no, actually we're just deeply obsessed with each other. But I liked that they allowed them to just enjoy that through this season. Like, they were still bickering and fighting, or, you know, disagreeing about politics or this or that, but just like Ava's pitch for her show, it's like ultimately about them like helping each other and empowering one another. And I think that was like a really tender, beautiful relationship you don't get to see between women on shows very often.
But I do think that the sort of battling each other, or, you know, the toxicity of the middle season is what gets us to this point. Like, because Deborah is such a, like, defended person, where she's had to go through this brutal industry where everybody was rude to her, you know, it was this boys club, and she fought her way in, and then her sister and her husband, like, she's just been through so many things that she has so many walls built up. And I think it takes a while for someone to like get those walls down. And then Ava is like a classic millennial of like, just like needs to be needed and will sort of like work herself to death in order to have that happen. But I think it's like they only by like continuing to rub up against each other could they rub off on each other. Like I sort of think that there are some lessons that are just like hard won lessons in life that you can't really learn or I guess unlearn in like easy ways. Like, yes, therapy is very helpful. And, you know, I love going to therapy. It's done so much for my life. But I think there's certain things where it's like you just have to go through something difficult, or you have you have to go through a bad dating relationship in order to understand things about
yourself.
Right,
but you don't usually stay with that bad dating.
No.
You know what I mean?
But I think the thing with Hacks is like, you can tell even from the first season that like both of these people have good qualities to them. They're just, it's just how do they sort of scrape away all of the like plaque and BS that they've got in between them in order to get to those good parts. And sometimes that does require, I think, like, you know, yelling at each other or sort of like building up resentment and then letting it out and then being like, okay, yeah, wait, like now we're fine.
Yeah. She does slap her, right? Season one.
I'm like, I think there's various people slapping people at different points. I honestly can't remember. Yeah. We don't support physical violence. That's never the answer.
But stay in that job. Your boss might turn out to be your best friend. Just kidding. I know what you mean. I mean, it's obviously a very specific relationship at play here.
Yeah. Because also it's like, it's a creative sort of partnership, yeah, which I think is different. Like, this isn't like a, you know, corporate assistant, CEO, yeah, and their assistant, like, because that's different.
It's different. Yeah, you're not family. Don't act like it. Yeah. So, do you have a favorite scene, a favorite moment, a favorite highlight you want to talk about
from the finale?
I don't know. I guess let's say from this. Let's say from the show and from the season.
I mean, I did from the finale. I guess I did love that the opening season of the finale like mirrors the opening shot, yep, of the pilot, of like sort of Deborah walking through the room, yeah, versus Ava walking through her set. So I did really like that symmetry. Let me think. I loved the moment when Laurie Metcalf showed back up as the like as the tour bus operator from season two, and it, now working as the like loadout person at Central Park for Pete Wentz. Like, I thought that was such a fun callback. I really did love all of the Amazing Race stuff. I thought that was a genius idea for an episode, and I'm like, I don't know why no one has sort of done that before. I'm like, let's put, you know, season two of I Love LA, like, let's put Jordan Firstman on MasterChef, you know, like, I will watch it. I'm trying to think. The moment that I remember, like, feeling the, or, okay, I guess, wait, you go.
I didn't mean to set you up. Okay, so less meaningful, but, well, you know what? It was meaningful. I loved the anti-AI episode. I think that was important to be said on a major network, and I respect them for doing it. It was validating and good. And also, it led to my favorite line in the series, which I think in the season five, at least, where they find out that she'd been Ja Ruled, and Ava yells into her phone, "Google, how to sink a super yacht, no AI."
Oh, yes.
Which was very relatable to me personally. I think I see a lot of myself there, for better and for worse. And then early on stuff, I think when I like remember like why I like this show, the real parts for me will always be Schaefer and Lusak. So maybe that's basic, but like they were the comedy relief for me. Like, obviously everyone's doing great. I get it. Like, Deborah's funny. Yeah. But I don't think I would have loved the show as much without like the zaniness of Meg Stalter's character and how she like made this, what on paper is the most annoying person on planet Earth, like super funny and likable and charming. And their relationship, especially as it played out in season five, was very cute, and like having to mature and like give up what they think is quit and give up their dream was sweet. And her also doing the bad cop, good cop thing is so funny.
The run of jokes about the Lassie production that they on is always good. I think that maybe the funniest scene in the entire season, or in the entire show, though, is the Branzino sequence. Like, that is amazing.
That's a meltdown.
Chucks the fish.
Have you ever?
It doesn't even.
Have you ever snapped? Have you ever screamed at someone?
Have I ever screamed at somebody? Yes, I have. I mean, I feel like I definitely screamed at my siblings like a good amount.
Okay, yeah, yeah, it doesn't count.
I think in In the professional world, no, I have never.
Yeah, never.
Somebody. I did have a run-in with somebody on Fire Island where I was. Have I told you this story before?
No.
I'm like, okay.
You don't have to air it if you don't want to. We can talk offline.
No,
don't forget
no,
that.
No, no. It's a funny story. It's a funny story. So we were, there was, the thing with Fire Island is like, you're all trapped in this house. You're all trapped on this island. Yeah. So it's like stakes are high. Mm-hmm. And there was a year, a couple of years ago before I got sick, where we went for 4th of July weekend, which seemed like a good idea on paper because there was going to be a lot of people there. But what I don't think I realized or anyone really realized was that it was like Pride weekend in New York is the end of June. And then we were rolling right into this trip to Fire Island. So it was like everybody was exhausted. Then we get to the house and it's like there's we overbook the house because everyone wants to go and it's a holiday weekend. And 4th of July was like on a Tuesday. So it just kept like, there was sort of no reprieve. Like it was just like, go, 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 go. And it wasn't even necessarily like all partying, but just like a lot of like persons, social engagement.
Physical, yeah.
Like you don't really have like a lot of space. You're not sleeping well. You're not like eating. Yeah. So I was sort of like a little bit on the brink. And we had gone to this thing sort of in the afternoon. And I was talking with this guy it wasn't like I had any prior connections to him, but I was just like talking to him at this party and was sort of like, oh, like I think he's attractive, whatever. I had told one of my friends this. And this other guy who was in the house, like knew this information and basically like of the, you know, hundreds of people on this island decided to go like out of his way to try to like make out with this person. And so I guess that they, like, after I had left the party, he had, like, tracked this guy down, like, made out with him, whatever. Again, not, like, a big life-changing thing. It was not, like, it was not, like, a Sierra thing where I, dated this person. Like, truly, I had met this person within, like, the hour of this happening. Yeah. But that night, we're taking, like, a water taxi to another party that's like on the adjacent section of the island. Yeah. And while we're on this water taxi at like midnight, the guy decides that he needs to like tell my friends that this happened just in case like I would find out and freak out about it. So my friends are like, well, why would you do this? Two, then why would you tell us? Like, obviously we're going to tell him, whatever. And he's like, well, because the guy might be at this party that we're going to. And then like, we might make out again. And my friends are like, well, you don't even like what is, like why would you set this up? So anyways, so I'm sort of oblivious, but then they tell me and I'm like annoyed at this situation, which would have been fine. And I deal with being annoyed, I feel like, very well. It is like one of my chief
like
personality traits. Like I'm just like, okay, I'm annoyed, like let me go by myself, let me be a Sagittarius, let me deal with this, I'll come back, I'll be fine. But this guy kept following me around the party. Like he clearly felt guilty about it, but then didn't know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
And so he just kept following me around this event and I kept trying to like leave conversations and he kept coming up to me. And so at one point I was standing at the bar and he comes up to me and he goes, are we beefing?
Ew.
And I was furious. I turned to him and I said, you can go fuck yourself. And then like stormed away. I have never felt so empowered in my life. The whole rest of the evening, I was like, I am on a cloud nine. I have unlocked some level of like consciousness that I had never experienced before.
You're free.
I was like, and then of course the next day I was like, you know what? I actually think that I shouldn't be here on this island. I like packed up my bags and I left and I was like, I'm leaving early. Bye, everybody. See you guys like in a couple of weeks. I need some space. I don't think I'm doing well.
My God, the drama.
But yes, that's the only time I've cracked. Have you screamed at anybody?
I don't think so. I've been on what is it called? Like I've gone on rants on social media or like I've yelled at people over text like who have said horrific things, you know. But I don't know if I've ever, let me think of like my big.
You and Rob don't scenes. Have fighting matches.
No, we don't have big, loud fighting matches. At least not publicly. No, just
you're not really a screamer. I feel like
no, I'm a stewer. I'm a. Yes. I'm gonna sit on this, and I'm never gonna forget it. And one day you'll know what you've done to me.
Yes. No. Exactly. Exactly.
I think it's I think there are scenarios that people have told me where I'm like, oh, I would have chewed her out publicly, but I can't say for sure because I've never actually been in that sort of scenario. I think because people know not to say something, you know, racist in front of me or something.
Well, also, it's kind of like if you like navigate your life and you sort of know how to like process things, a lot of times you either don't get in those situations or you can tell that one of those situations is coming and you sort of are able to maneuver around it.
Yeah.
Like with my situation, like I never had any intention of like going up and yelling at this person.
Right. Yeah.
Like it was only because
you're being badgered.
Like, yes. Like I just kept being sort of like poked at that I finally snapped.
Ava needed that. Ava needed a release. She needed
It's sort of like crying too. It's like once you do it, then you're like, oh, like you kind of see, I mean, it feels good. And you can kind of see how you could end up like falling into a habit of like you're the person who's like always crying or you're the person who's always screaming at someone because it is like, oh, well, this does sort of feel good.
It's
there's
good.
Like a cathartic energy here to it. That you can't allow yourself to tap into too much.
So funny.
Okay, I want to talk about Deborah's death or, you know, whatever. I feel like I heard from before this episode airing, like the rumor was going around, I think probably just because it was a season finale of like, oh, like Deborah's gonna die.
Yeah.
And so when I was watching it and she reveals that she has cancer, she doesn't want to do treatment, she's going to Switzerland, she's going to have this, you know, euthanasia, self, what's it called?
Assisted suicide.
That I was like, oh, like this is like a sort of depressing way to end this show that's been so lovely the whole time. And then right as she's about to get on the train to go to Switzerland, she comes up with a joke and she starts to write it down in her journal like she has in the entire show of like, oh, like this is a stand-up bit I should save. And then only after she's written it down, you know, sort of like from muscle memory, does she realize like, wait a second, like I actually won't need this because I'm gonna die. And then that's when she has the realization of like, oh, maybe I don't want to die. Like maybe I can turn having cancer into another act of comedy. And then she finds Ava and she has this incredible line where she's like, I don't know how many years I have to live, but I have another hour. And I'm like, oh, that, like, whoever wrote that, when they came up with that line, I was like, ooh, that is so good. That is so good. And so then, you know, the final scene is them sort of just like walking down the Las Vegas Strip together. But how did you feel about her dying versus not dying? Because then I saw a Vulture article that was like, they should have just killed her. Like, this was sort of a cop-out.
No, I don't think so. I think, honestly, it seemed so totally Deborah to be like, nah, I'm done. And it's like, when Ava says, like, there's a 40% chance. Like, I was like, damn, Deborah. Like, what are you doing? You don't want to lose your hair that bad? Like, it's such an ego trip to want to just end it on your terms.
Yeah.
And so I felt like, I kind of assumed that's how it would go. Just I'm not saying I was wise or something for catching that. I think it was pretty much set up that she wouldn't go through with it, because it's one thing to have a character, you know, get sick and die, and it's another to have a character, you know, kill themselves, however justifiably. And so it seemed pretty obvious that she'd realize, like, yeah, you know what, I do have life, because she does. Like, it's like, it doesn't have to be a literal death sentence, at least not at that stage. Like, I think Ava made the most logical argument where it's like, no, you don't, you can try and see, like, this is always an option. So I liked that. I liked that character choice for her, because it did feel sort of like what she would do. She's a pretty impulsive, egotistical person who would think, okay, I'm done. which I can, you know, respect, but also see that that's not really how you'd want to make that decision. I don't think assisted suicide is something where you can just kind of shrug into it. I do feel mm-hmm. like you would want, I think we're just trained as humans to want to live. Biologically, we're not, it's not easy to decide it's done, especially when there's not like symptoms at all yet. And so I liked how it played out. I think having her die would have been honestly less moving, less of a payoff. Not like, because I don't think the show was like trying to do a last holiday, like, oh, actually it was the wrong scan and you're not going to die anyways. Like, it's like the what if is not what matters. It's like, yeah, you have an hour, like just live for that. And I think that was a more beautiful like testament to what these people gave each other, which was sort of the will to carry forward, to carry on. Because they both start in pretty dark places.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I also feel like there's a very fine line between like assisted suicide and like suicide, mm-hmm. suicide. And this did feel like, on one hand, while I am pro, like, you know, being able to make that choice for yourself, especially if you, you know, there's yeah. not another option. I also am like, if you can just sort of like take yourself on a train to Switzerland, if you
exactly
you know, sort of like if it's things like are getting a little out the too Louvre. Tough, yeah. then that is, then I don't necessarily know how I feel about that, like yeah. from a moral perspective. I will say, I, not to be too like pro corporate capitalism here on the podcast, because Lord knows I
oh
hate
no
that.
I'm gonna start screaming at you,
but I think that between the Devil Wears Prada 2 speech where Miranda's like, I love my work, and then Deborah being like, okay, wait, I'm not going to like the thing that I most like want to live for is this work that I do because I love it so much and I have mm-hmm. like dedicated my whole life to doing this. Mm-hmm. I did really feel both of those like sentiments of, yeah, like I really do love what I do yeah. for work. Like I really enjoy it and it is something that matters to me and that I think is worthwhile and is like a worthy way to live a life. And so yeah. I appreciated that both of these were kind of saying like, okay, if you do love what you do, like not that everyone's work should be their main focus mm-hmm. in life. And obviously like friends and family and love are also extremely valuable and, you know, things that I have in my life as well and things that Deborah has, but like, to say that like work is also something that does matter and that does like have yeah. value, especially if you're doing something that's creative, I thought was yeah. a sort of like an interesting turn to it all.
Well, but and I think it's like important that it wasn't her love of Ava or her love right. of her daughter who yes. was like, oh, I have to live for them. Like, it's like, no, she needed to decide what she wanted, like what fulfilled her as a right. person.
Yeah, it's like you can't live for other people as yeah. great as other people are. At the end of the day, like you have to live for yourself.
Yeah. yeah. And I think, yeah, I agree. Like I obviously, if Jeff Bezos was saying that, I'd have further right. questions about, yes. well, are you really working, sir? And what about the people who are dying for you? Like, let's think about them. Like, shut mm-hmm. the fuck up. But I do think in this scenario, it is a person whose life's work is her work, and that doesn't
right.
count as less than someone caring about their kids or mm-hmm. having a romantic partner that fulfills them. So
yeah,
I think that, and I think that's true. It's like all of us work, like, you know, we work for something. And I think even people who are like, I live for my kids would ultimately be, there's something more tangible to them specifically that's thrumming through that love, like that's right. fulfilling them. So yeah, I honestly felt like it was kind of the perfect ending. You have the dramatic element of a, you know, comedy, a dramedy. But at the end of the day, it felt very authentic to kind of the characters as they've been built out over 5 seasons. And like, I think it too was important that she wasn't the depressed version of her we got in Singapore, where it would be a decision right. made out of like mourning, but it was a very empowered, supposedly empowered like choice she was ready to make. And then ultimately decided, well, maybe I'll just ride the train a little longer.
Right.
I liked that. I think too, it was important to have her be like, you say it won't change you, but seeing someone sick does change how you view them. And I think we right. see that. We see that in how we remember someone like Chadwick Boseman or personal people, where it does become sort of the defining feature of their lives. It's like, oh, the tragedy of their death. And so I like that they like talked about that. And it also added to the realism of someone who just did end on the highlight, like to feel like, well, is it worth like fighting for scraps after this, you know? So I think they handled it really well.
And being sick is not fun at all. No. And having gotten cancer so young, it is really sort of daunting to think about, because like I know how much it sucked mm-hmm. in a like young, healthy person's body.
Yeah.
Like the thought of getting cancer while you were in your like 70s or 80s, like is really grueling, because you're going to have to go through so much and it's going to take so long for your body to sort of like get back to whatever mm-hmm. the like original starting point was, if it ever gets back to that.
Yeah.
Like I can definitely see the urge to be like, I don't want to do that. Like, no.
Yeah. And they seemed really careful to not make a moral judgment, whether that was good or bad. It seemed very neutral from the writer's perspective of like, she could do this, she could not. It's her choice. Well, obviously, a privileged choice, but.
And even her decision to not go through with it isn't like a moral decision or like a, oh, like I should stay because of you, like you knew. It's like, no, like I changed this because I realized that I like wanted to use this for a comedy special that I want to write.
Yeah. 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 I think it was really smart to kind of wrap up that way. And I hope there's no spinoff, just because I think it kind of robs the magic of what it was. And it's similar to like Broad City, like how Broad City ends, and it's like kind of the perfect ending, and you don't need to revisit these characters no matter how much you love them. Like it's just kind of like it needs to exist as it did. And that's what's always fun about a show that manages to stick the landing.
Yeah. Well, and I'm like, this is going to win every single Emmy award, like, possible. Like, everybody in the cast is getting nominated. Everybody in the cast is winning. Like, it's going to be crazy.
Bitch, so you got this, bitch.
The person who I need to win is Leslie Bibb for Strap. A classic. Do you strap? My favorite line perhaps in all of the series.
She was very good. She's very good in her Portia style lesbian.
Well, I also like there's just nothing else. Like the TV, the straits of TV are so dire right now. Like there is next to nothing competing for these Emmys that is like worthwhile.
Hello.
Severance isn't competing. Severance was last year. Severance does not have a new season.
I thought we were speaking generally, but specifically this season. Yeah, there's not much going on.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, sure, there are some of these shows like Severance that people like that are just sort of like on hiatus, or like White Lotus. I'm like, I don't know what else is like that. That's not
For All Mankind.
For All Mankind is eligible this year.
Okay.
For whatever reason, it does not appear to be getting any Emmy traction. But like,
when does that happen?
So the Emmy voting or the like eligibility window closed at the end of May. So like which I think is why this like finale was right up against the end there. But yeah, so it's like this past calendar year, so like from June of 2025 through this, and then the voting is coming up. We'll get nominations in like July sometime, I think, and then the winners will be announced in like beginning of September, I think is usually how it works. But like the comedy series contenders, Hacks, like front runner, then Abbott Elementary, Shrinking, and Only Murders in the Building, which I feel like have been around for forever. And then Margo's Got Money Troubles, The Comeback, The Bear is still eligible. Nobody Wants This. Like, I'm like, none of these are really instilling a lot of, I guess, Jury Duty, Company Retreat, I really liked. So, and I liked I Love LA. I'd be fine with that. The Fall and Rise of Reggie Dinkins was good. Okay, so there's like some good stuff in the comedy category, I guess.
Yeah. Cute.
But, okay, well, any other thoughts on Hacks as a whole?
Will this be Jean Smart's highlight of her career?
Yes. She has won. If she wins the Emmy for this, I think that she will be the first actress to win Best Actress in a Comedy for every season of the show that she's been, you know, like for every season, because this will be her fifth year in a row, which is crazy. And I'm sort of like, that means that they, like, somebody's got to start making better comedies, because it's just been like a cakewalk the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it'll be interesting. Justice for Meg Stalter. She deserves a win if she hasn't.
She has already. Not, but I think she'll be up against Hannah Einbinder, so she'll probably.
I think Meg Stalter did a better job. So,
I guess that's true.
I'm on board. So,
okay, next week we could. Masters of the Universe is coming out. Oh, I know you're really excited to see that.
Yeah.
Also, we could do an episode on Backrooms. Or the hit World War II film Pressure. Which I know that we love.
I didn't realize it's about two dueling meteorologists. I thought it was just the one.
Wait, did you see it?
No, I just saw the AMC summary of it.
Oh yeah, no, two. There's two
meteorologists. Two meteorologists.
They're going
one DJ who comes out victorious.
Exactly.
So funny. Oh yeah, okay. We'll see what I get up to. What I feel like. That's how it goes.
Okay. Maybe we could do a double episode.
Yeah, for sure. There's an easy double feature in there.
Pressure and Backrooms.
Yeah. Double feature.
I'm really excited for the double feature of the RuPaul movie Stop That Train and Steven Spielberg's Disclosure.
Delightful. Can't wait. Something to look forward to.
Is it Disclosure Train or Stop That Disclosure?
Stop That Disclosure for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks everyone for listening. We'll be back next week. Anything else? No? I think that's it. Okay. See you guys then. Bye.